AM W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A new report by the Department of Homeland Security's internal watchdog sent to Congress and obtained exclusively by ABC News reports that more than 32,000 unaccompanied migrant children have failed to appear for their immigration court hearings. And as of now, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials have been unable to track them down. President Biden delivering his speech on night one of the Democratic National Convention. He will not be there when Kamala Harris delivers her speech on Thursday. ABC's John Carl in Chicago.
This is such a contrast from the 2016 campaign, where you had all the bitterness of the Bernie Sanders supporters. The entire Democratic Party here is unified behind Kamala Harris and energized in a way that, frankly, they were absolutely not energized under Joe Biden.
Donald Trump campaigning in the swing state of Michigan today. On Monday, he and his running mate J.D. Vance were both in Pennsylvania. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez set to resign today following his federal bribery conviction. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Young Democrats in particular say they're energized by Kamala Harris's rise to the top of the party's ticket. They say she's best on issues affecting young voters like the environment, reproductive rights, and the economy.
Kamala Harris just released her economic plan, which makes college more affordable, housing more affordable, so that as we, you know, enter the workforce again, we can afford those costs.
18-year-old delegate Henry Palo is from Mirabel. Universities of Wisconsin System President Jay Rothman says he'll submit a budget next year to increase the state's funding for higher education by $457 million a year. Wisconsin ranks 43rd when it comes to funding its public universities. Rothman's plan has pay raises for faculty and staff, but no tuition increases. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Ascentia Health will be hosting a bone marrow drive on Wednesday in downtown Duluth. According to a Fox 21 report, the drive will be held from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the organization's East 2nd Street location. Healthcare workers can use a cheek swab test to determine if a potential donor is a match for people suffering from diseases like leukemia and sickle cell anemia. If they are a match, the organization would call the donor back in for more blood testing before going forward with the bone marrow donation. A Washburn County man has been arrested following a fatal UTV crash over the weekend. According to law enforcement authorities, the accident occurred on Schrider Road in La Follette Township on Saturday night. When authorities arrived, they found the two occupants trapped under the UTV, which had rolled over in the crash. 52-year-old Jennifer Kopinski was pronounced deceased at the scene. 56-year-old Richard Thone was taken to a hospital for treatment before his arrest. Authorities believe alcohol was a factor in the crash. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers in St. Louis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and Cardinals open up a three-game series tonight at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. Milwaukee's Frankie Montas against the Cardinals' right-hander Eric Fetty. The Brewers with an 11-game lead ahead of the Cardinals in the division, coming off that sweep of the Cleveland Guardians. The Cards losing to the Dodgers Sunday 2-1. NFL, Packers back at practice after losing in Denver 27-2. Quarterback Sean Clifford on what he could have done differently in the game.
It's tough to say just now, bro. Broadly, speeding it up a little bit, I thought that there were some plays to be made where my eyes were just late. When you're playing guys like Pat Surtain and, you know, the Broncos once, you just can't be late. And if you are, it's going to either, you know, result in an incompletion or an interception. So I thought that was, you know, when we had plays and we made plays, it was on time.
That's Packers backup quarterback Sean Clifford. They face the Ravens Thursday in a joint practice. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to 76 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the southeast at only around 5-ish here through the day. Tonight, partly cloudy, 51. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 78 by Thursday. Partly cloudy with a high of 77. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
Matt Nair on air.
I trust Tim Walz to blank.
One from Luke Mathers that says, Tim Walz seems like the neighbor who knew that you were going to be out of town that weekend, so he mowed your lawn while you were gone so you didn't have to do it when you got back.
Keith from Middleton.
I was just going to say, I trust Tim Walz to watch my 3 and 5 year old grandchildren.
I trust Tim Walz to escort me home to get away from the creep at the bar.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, our friend and colleague Todd Alba joins us at 10:33 from the DNC. Hour number two, Dr. Kristen Lierley, now an official candidate. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, what is that we're hearing?
Carol Channing. Sure, Carol Channing, who is famous for Hello Dolly, but during the LBJ campaign, it was converted to Hello Lyndon, and that was her singing at the Democratic National Convention.
So Sandy, before we went to break, I had jotted down some of the accomplishments of Joe Biden's presidency. And I think, Sandy, what's really important to cover and think about when I mention these six or seven different, focal points, is that Biden was only president for 4 years. He didn't get eight. And so to accomplish the things that he accomplished, with two of those years being COVID years, Sandy.
The first two were COVID, and the second two were him without controlling the legislature.
Yeah, this is really kind of amazing that he was able to get these things accomplished, is it safe to say?
Yeah, I mean, when you don't control Congress, presidents usually get their first 2 years where they can control Congress and the White House, and then usually it turns upside down. And so he got quite a bit accomplished during a four-year period, much of it with some bipartisan help.
Infrastructure, which clearly is his signature. Can you say it's his signature accomplishment?
I talk about
some of the other things, but go ahead.
Well, it's certainly the one that impacts all of us regularly. We get in our cars and drive, and we realize the scope of the projects that were precipitated by that bill all around Wisconsin, but all around the country. I was out in Utah, and Utah is experiencing the same sort of infrastructure rebuild that we are. So, the country had a lot of deferred maintenance that had gone on for decades and decades. And the prior president had promised infrastructure reform but couldn't deliver, and Joe Biden did.
Microchip manufacturing.
One of the things that people point at and wring their hands about was the notion that microchips were fundamentally and strategically important to the United States, and that they were all being manufactured in Taiwan and China, and very few in the United States, even though we were the country that developed them, invented them, and is the country that continues to improve them. And so his bill and the legislation he passed is devoting a substantial amount of federal dollars to developing and promoting the creation of many jobs, and also the capacity to build chips within the United States.
green energy investment?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the Build Back Better program involved a substantial amount of investments that are designed to deal with the global climate change, much more so than anybody had succeeded in passing in the past.
Cost control on insulin and other prescription meds.
Yeah, that's the most recent thing they did. But they got the bill passed 2 years ago that permitted them to negotiate with Big Pharma. And, you know, proof of the extent to which Washington had been cowed by lobbyists on K Street, in particular lobbyists from big industries with lots of money, was the fact that long ago in the legislation that accomplished Medicare, the government was forced by the lobbying organizations to give up the ability to negotiate prices for prescription drugs with Big Pharma, unlike all the other countries in the world. And 2 years ago, Joe Biden was able to get a bill passed without any bipartisan support. It was pure and simply a Democratic effort, with Kamala Harris voting for it to break the tie. And now it's the beginning. This is the first round of negotiations, but there will be more, and there will be more money saved. Sandy, and it's saving money for taxpayers.
Sandy, the immunization that took place during COVID, just the magnitude and the amount of effort. You remember, you and I remember going and getting those inoculations and also getting the test out to people. I mean, that was a monumental undertaking that I think many of us have just taken for granted, completely forgotten about.
Well, I think that, you know, the first year of COVID under Donald Trump was chaos. There was no leadership provided, no direction to the states on what to do. The states were pitted against one another to bid for scarce resources like masks and other necessary protective articles associated with the medical problems created by COVID. And I think the Biden administration brought to bear an organized process to deal with this unknown but potentially deadly pathogen. And did a very successful job when they put their mind to it, and they decided that vaccination was the route to go. They put out and organized a very effective vaccination process, and the distribution of scarce resources became organized, and so the problem was put in the rearview mirror. We forget what it was like because it was quite effectively handled and put in the rearview mirror. It was politicized, continues to be politicized. The whole notion of mask wearing is apparently somehow a political sign.
You know, Sandy, repairing and expanding NATO. Yeah, Donald Trump came in and, you know, put his foot on the neck of NATO and told all of them, we are not going to defend you if you don't, you know, invest more money in your own defense. And he created some hostility towards NATO. So I think people completely forgotten about that.
Well, I think the problem is twofold. I think the notion that getting the NATO countries to contribute more to their own defense is probably a beneficial one to the United States ultimately. Although, you know, we designed NATO to be something that we controlled and that we provided the defense for, because we were trying to make sure there wouldn't be European wars that we would get sucked into anymore. The first two world wars were European wars between European countries. But he attacked NATO, and he began to talk about NATO as if it was something that could be ignored by the United States. That the Article 5, which is the important article in NATO that causes the alliance to have to withstand enemies together. If a NATO country is invaded, each country will treat that as an invasion of their own country in terms of how they will contribute to the defense. Incidentally, Project 2025 continues to back off from NATO, and there talk about converting the Article 5 pledge to being only the provision by the United States of the nuclear umbrella to NATO, but not to provide any other kind of necessarily significant support. And that is a huge change and would extremely destabilize NATO and might well cause NATO to become a European alliance and not one which includes the United States, which in the long run is not something the United States wants.
Well, you know, Sandy, J.D. Vance the other day had an opportunity to say something positive about NATO. He clearly knew what his response, the impact of what his response was, which is really anti-NATO, but he said it anyway. He clearly wanted to make it clear that he kind of, and Donald Trump, want to make it clear that NATO continues to financially invest money. NATO has not done it, Sandy, since Joe Biden. They've certainly ramped up those things, but the fact that J.D. Vance is right back at it, saying, well, we're not so concerned about NATO as we are about the United States.
Well, you know, I think that what we need is a cogent discussion of foreign policy. And I, for one, would like to see a foreign policy that didn't require a defense budget at the scale that we currently have it. But you know, that isn't what is being pursued by Trump and his vice presidential candidate when they talk about this. They want to scale up the military and they want to turn their back on NATO, which is mutually contradictory in my mind in terms of why you would do anything with respect to reconsidering the foreign policy.
And arming Ukraine, Sandy, whether people support it or not, depending on whatever side of the equation you come down on, if Joe Biden hadn't made the investment in Ukraine, we wouldn't be talking about Ukraine trying to resist anything right now. They would be a part of Russia. Is it safe to say that?
Well, there'd be part of Ukraine,
parts of it,
part of Russia.
Yes.
Yeah, the part that's contested, I think the Donbass and the Crimea is what is really under at contest here. And you know, I've spoken about Ukraine in the past, and I thought our policy leading up to the problem, the war in Ukraine in 2014, our policy back then could be faulted, and might have been problems with it. But the issue becomes, we are where we are right now, okay? And the situation is what it is right now. And that situation, if the United States suddenly turned its back on Ukraine at this point, having essentially put Ukraine in the position it's in, or at least been a party to it, would be viewed by the rest of the world as the United States being an unreliable ally. And that's not what we can be, okay? Our world position needs to be premised on alliances, because it is through alliances that we can ultimately back off on our huge military expenditures by getting the rest of the world to participate jointly in their own defense and in the defense of others.
844-967-2789. It's Tuesday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. Hang on the phone lines. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're looking square, Lyndon. We can tell, Lyndon. You're still glowing, you're still growing, you're still going strong. We hear the
band. You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Our southern border is in chaos, with drugs and criminals flowing into our country. But sanctuary cities protect illegal immigrants who commit crimes from being deported. Like an illegal immigrant arrested for battery in Madison. He should have been deported. Instead, he was released back into the community and went on to assault several more women, including a 13-year-old girl. Senator Tammy Baldwin voted 9 times to support federal funding for sanctuary cities that refuse to cooperate with immigration officials and release these dangerous criminals back onto our streets. And Senator Baldwin voted for amnesty for 11 million illegals, including convicted criminals. Call Senator Baldwin, 608-264-5338. Urge her to support S-1068, the Stop Dangerous Sanctuary Cities Act. Stop protecting illegal immigrants and start protecting Wisconsin. Paid for by One Nation, www.onenationamerica.org.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Heard a young man speaking out just the other day, so I stopped to take a listen to what he had to say. He spoke straight and simple, with that I was impressed. He said, once and for all, why not the best? He said his name was Jimmy Carter, and he was running for president. So he laid out a plan of action, made a lot of sense. Talked about the government and how good it could be for you and me. That's the way it ought to be right now. Once and for all, why not the best?
All right, welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm in Chicago at the Democratic Convention along with Civic Media. We are here in full effect. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, let's go to the phone lines with Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you, as always. I just wanted to chime in real quick. You guys were talking about military budgets and NATO and that type of thing. You know, one of the things that kind of got my attention on Project 2025 is how much of the U.S. military was potentially going to be used domestically to knock down protests, to do some other things. It looked like that the 2025 plan for the military is going to expand tremendously for domestic application. I wanted to get Sandy's. I know he read it. He's probably up to speed on this, but I think it's a very, very important point to discuss.
Thank you very much for the call. Oh, hang on, Mike. Go ahead, Sandy.
Yeah, Project 2025 has a very expansive view for the military. The portion about the military, I think, was written by the military. They want to renovate, rebuild each of the armed forces, modernize them, they say, as if they aren't modern now. And they also want to devote substantial numbers of military to, for instance, the border issues and to high crime cities. I mean, it appeared to be that they were moving, the 2025 has a concept of our military that puts many situations into something that would begin to feel like martial law. And martial law with the military in charge, the National Guard and military operating domestically. And, you know, it's kind of a frightening prospect. When you look at Project 2025, it basically is premised on vastly increasing the powers of the presidency, vastly increasing the size of the office of the White House, and vastly increasing the discretion of the president and encouraging the use by the president of his discretion or her discretion to, for instance, use the military. Because, you know, the Congress can be involved in lots of things, but the president is the commander in chief and is capable of doing many things with the military that are short of a declaration of war. And so I felt like Project 2025 was particularly upside down with respect to how it expected and how it was proposing that the military would be changed in its function and in its scale. It was going to back out of Europe and focus extreme amounts of military power to the to the west towards China, and to create essentially a Cold War where there might not need to be a massive Cold War with a very effective opponent, China, a much more effective opponent than the Soviet Union was.
Mike?
It appears to me that, you know, there's a traditional thing, and again, you can talk about this, Sandy, is posse comitatus. You know, Congress and the Founding Fathers were explicit in their communications, you know, through Federalist Papers and everything else, that a standing army should not be used and weaponized against the citizens. It's a big deal. And I think we need to shed as much light on that particular topic as possible. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
That Project 2025 was born out of a group called the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation, if you trace it back, applied for nonprofit status. I believe, I don't know, I want your feedback on this. I believe, but I don't know, Lois Lerner, I believe it was, the IRS investigated them because they didn't believe they should have a tax-free status, but they got it. Now, Jim Jordan wants to investigate something. Boy, if that isn't a can of worms, please enlighten me, guys, because I really believe that Heritage Foundation is far from what the name indicates. What do you guys think?
Thank you very much for the call, Bill. Sandy read it, so Sandy.
Well, the Heritage Foundation was behind Project 2025, and the question of whether operations like the Heritage Foundation ought to be 501c3 tax-free organizations or whether they ought to be something else is a serious question, because there clearly has come to be, and I suppose it's on both sides of the aisle, but the conservative side has done this far more extensively, has created these tax-free foundations, which are entirely devoted to at least ideological processes, if not political processes, and the two cross over constantly. And there's no question that the Heritage Foundation is one of the ideological bedstones for the Republican conservative movement.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Bill. You know, Sandy, the whole military thing, I wanted to address that. So I'm hearing people say, well, you know, Republicans especially, what is she going to do with the threats from China and the threats, you know, from Russia and the threats from North Korea? As if the president of the United States, Sandy, unilaterally makes military decisions. We know that Donald Trump does not listen to, here's the difference. Donald Trump does not listen to the generals and the people who, Sandy, are the ones who have the intellect as it relates to what happens militarily with our military. The president of the United States certainly is in a position that he certainly should listen to his advisors and then make decisions. But we know that Donald Trump unilaterally just made his own decisions. One thing we do know about Kamala Harris, Sandy, is she won't be making the calls about what happens militarily.
I think actually the president does make the calls, but the next
let me correct it. She won't be making the calls without listening to the people who have the intellect and then make the decision. We know Trump totally ignores that, and we saw him totally ignore it. And so, yeah, but we'll talk about it on the other side. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday to my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
We need Jimmy Carter. We can't afford to settle for less. America, once and for all, why not the best?
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for matinee on air.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers is praising Vice President Kamala Harris.
She's just a class act. She's really smart, energetic, and she's just a good leader. I mean, I recognize that right off the bat.
Evers is leading the Wisconsin delegation at the DNC. He says he plans to stay in Chicago tonight when Harris and running mate Tim Walz rally in Milwaukee. Republican running mate J.D. Vance campaigns in Kenosha today. Evers' task force on Wisconsin's healthcare worker shortage is out with its recommendations. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez says they include expanding Medicaid and increasing rates for home and community-based healthcare. Wisconsin's nursing shortage could be 19,000 by 2040. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. A new skate park in the Gary New Duluth neighborhood is almost ready for its grand opening. According to a Fox 21 report, the nearly $2 million project was years in the making between fundraising and construction and could be officially opened as soon as Labor Day weekend. The skate park will be part of the Gary New Duluth Rec Center and will serve both experienced skaters and kids who are just getting into the activity. Officials with the Gary New Duluth Alliance also hope the skate park will attract visitors from outside the area. A Duluth man has been sentenced to over 30 years in prison for a murder that happened about 1 year ago. 22-year-old Sanusi Bangora was charged with a variety of crimes relating to the 2023 shooting death of 19-year-old Paris Caden Allen. He was charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder, aiding and abetting second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon, and drive-by shooting. The other man involved in the incident, Brandon Williams Gillard, was sentenced to 40 years in prison earlier this year on the same charges. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. You gotta love an actor with a laissez-faire attitude. Maybe it's just because he's been around the block a few times, but actor Michael Keaton recently donned the Batman costume again for the film Batgirl. Keaton recently spoke to GQ magazine and said Warner Brothers shelved the film in 2022. When Keaton heard the news that no one would ever see his work, his response was, "I didn't care one way or another. Big, fun, nice check." Good work if you can get it. Do you have a rep that needs to confront all rumors when your relationship is not so great? Me neither. Addressing tabloid rumors that Coldplay frontman Chris Martin and actress Dakota Johnson are not going through with their plans to marry, a rep for the couple said that is not true and they are happily together. In my opinion, whenever there is a picture of an actress giving the camera a wave while wearing sunglasses in oversized jeans, you know things are over. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to 76 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the southeast at only around 5-ish here through the day. Tonight, partly cloudy, 51. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 78 by Thursday. Partly cloudy with a high of 77. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 57.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Todd Alba Show.
Even Scott Walker and other Republicans are going apoplectic because Trump keeps melting down into these personal attacks. He's just off the rails, Trigby.
You know, Scott may not be the brightest man, but he knows what politics is. Donald Trump is never going to change. Scott, come on the show. We'll talk about it. Todd and I will be nice to you, and I won't make Badger Boy State jokes.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
The next Nightlight is only available on Facebook, X, and YouTube. I discuss America's favorite movie snack with popcorn guru Chris Anderson. And award-winning director Justin Superstar joins me to talk about his new film.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. So, Sandy, what I was asking before we went to break, and maybe I framed it wrong, certainly the president makes the final call, but she's going to be listening to the Joint Chiefs, and clearly not making decisions unilaterally herself. So I think she's smart enough to know I would be foolish. It would be foolish of me to go into a room with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and act as if I know everything that's going on. She's going to take the advice of those men and women and then make the decision based on that. We do know, on the other hand, Donald Trump has a hard time taking advice from anybody, Sandy. I guess that's the point I was trying to make.
Well, and particularly from generals. He spent a good deal of his presidency denigrating the generals and the military. I think this whole concept of discussing Kamala and whether she's the appropriate person to be commander-in-chief is really part of this glass ceiling thing. And I think that we're past that, okay? But I think that that's going to be something. It's a dog whistle. I think the Republicans want to talk about it because I think they think that that could be a weakness for a woman running for office. But I think the world is past that. I think the examples of Angela Merkel and other world leaders has demonstrated it. And so I think it's just another symptom of the extent to which the Trump campaign wants to look backwards and wants to think backwardly and is thinking backwardly in this process.
You know, Sandy, you talked about Angela Merkel. And so, you know, there have been powerful women clearly in the past, and even as we speak right now, that are running nations. And so what is it about those nations that has been different about our nation and why we've been so late in being willing to accept that?
Well, you know, we have this, I think it's something about our character. It's something about our culture. It's remarkable that Hillary mentioned this last night. Her mother was born, as was my mother, born before women could vote. Women have only been able to vote since, I believe, the year is 1921. So that's not such a long time ago, 103 years, but that's really not a long time when you think about that the country was almost 240 years old at that point, or 140 years old at that point, and these women had been sitting on the sideline. There had been generations of women fighting to have the opportunity to participate, just to vote. Okay, so you know, I think we're coming of age. We might be coming of age a little more slowly.
Sandy, let me ask you about the the Electoral College. And the fact we were going to talk about it earlier, but it just somehow it slipped my mind. But I think it's critically important that you kind of explain that, because when you look at a state like California with all of those people, and they get two votes, and Rhode Island, they get four.
They get two votes plus a vote for each of their congresspeople. Okay,
right.
So they get a whole bunch of votes, but they only get two for the senatorial side.
The Senate.
And so when you look at the Electoral College votes for places like Wyoming, the very unpopulated parts of the country in terms of denseness of population, they get a disproportionate number of Electoral College votes, and similarly they get a disproportionate number of votes in the U.S. Senate, and I guess that was by design. But here's what I think is some of the genius of Kamala Harris in the ticket, I think Tim Walz is going to appeal very much to those many of the parts of the country that are red, number one, and number two are parts of the country which have disproportionately high electoral college votes. And I predict that the Democratic ticket is going to win some states on a surprise basis that have been traditionally red, the type of states that have been overrepresented, if you will, from a per capita standpoint in the Electoral College.
Help me understand how it is that Tim Walz is able to swing Republicans or rural voters over to the Democratic Party when that tells me that they weren't voting for parties, Sandy, as much as they were voting for people who understood their needs. So when they were voting for the Republicans, it wasn't that they were voting for the Republican Party.
No, I think we've talked about that at length, and I think even J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy, actually fingered this issue, which is that politicians weren't understanding and weren't speaking to the issues of middle America as located in the more rural parts of America and the economic issues that they faced. And so they were angry, okay? And they voted for Trump out of anger, not because he was presenting policies that were going to benefit them, but because he was giving the finger, essentially, figuratively speaking, to the establishment, which this part of America thinks has turned its back on them. And so I think they're particularly ready to listen to and to want to support someone who speaks to them and understands them. And clearly Tim Walz does. Tim Walz represents a red district in Minnesota. I think he says that there hadn't been a Democrat representing his district since 1900. So he's, and you know this by watching him, he can speak to issues in a vernacular that is very, I think, understandable and sympathetic. I think he's an extremely likable person, but I also think he's very good at explaining the plight of the people that he understands, and he can speak to it. And I think it's going to be a very important ingredient in the campaign.
So, the Republicans will say that's what J.D. Vance, that's his strength. And as he wrote that hillbilly, book, that's his strength, talking, and that's where he came from. And so that's the reason they said they picked him.
Well, that's what they thought, okay? But that's not how it's turned out. People from people who are like that, people, regular folk, don't call people childless cat ladies, okay? That's kind of an Eastern smirk. That's something you've maybe picked up at Yale as a nifty one-liner that would get some good smiles out of your sophisticated audience. But I think that's the problem with J.D. Vance. He isn't actually one of those people. And he demonstrated that, I guess, by immediately jumping into the world of private equity. Private equity is hardly the benchmark of middle America.
You know, Sandy.
Incidentally, the difference between, just look at that difference. J.D. Vance jumps into the world of private equity to try and make a fortune. Tim Walz has been a teacher his entire life, or a congressman, and can say that he doesn't, in his own name, own a single stock. Any stock that he owns might be in a 401k that he has, or a retirement fund. But he's a person who owns a home and has a retirement account. That sounds like middle America to me.
Sandy, there's no question. If you look at, the fact that with all the years that Walz has been, an elected official, he certainly has not profited from it. He hasn't increased his net worth. Because you look at his net worth and it pales in comparison to any other governor anywhere. in the nation almost. And
well, my guess is that our Governor Evers actually is a person with a low net worth as well. And I think that, one of the things about teachers, he and his wife, Tim Walz and his wife are both teachers, is that there is undoubtedly, as there is in Wisconsin, a teacher's pension fund, and that he will retire with some significant percentage of his rather paltry teacher pay. And so he'll continue to be able to live in the style to which he's been accustomed, which is modest. And so I think one of the things that Tim Walz has to offer is here is a person who has accomplished a lot and has found happiness in a modest lifestyle.
So let me ask you, Sandy, a week ago, a little bit more than a week ago, almost 2 weeks, there was this all-out attack on Tim Walz by the Republican Party in many different areas, mainly his military background. And so they really, came at him in a vicious manner. Sandy, they've been pushed back on because they no longer are pushing that narrative. It didn't work, did it?
Didn't stick. I think when someone is likable, it's harder to do that. Number two, I think what they did was such a trivial, it was so apparently grasping at straws. It isn't like he was George Santos running around lying about his military career. He wasn't doing that at all. And so he never said he was something that he wasn't. And I think that so it's just not going to stick. I think if they want to take him on and say he's been a progressive governor, I think that they can have that conversation and he'll be able to talk about the progressive, so-called progressive things that he accomplished in Minnesota. And I think most of those things will be things that the rest of the country will savor. OK, they'll say, hey, that doesn't sound so bad. You're attacking him for that, but sounds like a good idea to me.
Sandy, do you think we're headed towards a time in the near future that progressive is not a dirty word after this campaign and after this election period? Do you see maybe that term not being looked at as a negative term?
Well, I think for those who are conservative, the word progressive will be the opposite side of the coin and they won't favor it. But to be honest with you, I don't think that the right has succeeded in making progressive anything like the pejorative that they have made, for instance, the word socialist. Okay, and I think that progressive, they would hope to and would like to brand progressive in a manner that would make it as pejorative as communist or socialist, but it's not working. Okay, and I think that progressive, first of all, is a much more difficult term to define. But I think that progressives have been long successful politically because they typically favor things that are needed and wanted by the people.
844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. I'm still here at the Democratic Convention in Chicago. Excited about what's going to be happening later on this day. You two can join us. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Over the past 20 years, Wisconsin has seen a huge increase in reported elder abuse cases. Elder abuse is the verbal, physical, emotional, sexual, or financial abuse of a senior citizen. It can also be the intentional or unintentional neglect of an older person. Wisconsin's population of seniors 65 and older is projected to grow significantly in the coming decades. That's why we all share the responsibility to help protect our seniors by recognizing and reporting any signs of elder abuse. If you believe that elder abuse has been inflicted upon yourself or someone you know, please report it. Call the Wisconsin Elder Abuse Hotline toll-free at 1-833-586-0107 or visit reportelderabusewi.org. Respect our elders. Report abuse. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Justice.
This project is supported by the Administration for Community Living, ACL, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, as part of a financial assistance award totaling $120,000 with 100% funding by ACL-HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of nor an endorsement by ACL-HHS or the U.S. government.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
I'm a living sunset, lightning in my bones. It pushed me to the edge, but my will is strong. 'Cause I believe in a better way. Fools will be fools and wise will be wise, but I will look this world straight in the eyes. 'Cause I believe in a better way.
All right, welcome back to what is the last few minutes of the Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is aboard. Sandy in the music.
Well, actually, Kelvin, what is that last song at? That wasn't.
That was Better Way by Ben Harper. It was part of Barack Obama's 2008 campaign.
Uh-huh. All right, Kelvin, you know, you must have been reading my mind. Because, Sandy, I wanted to now take a moment to talk about the boogeyman that's going to be showing up tonight in Chicago. Barack Obama and his wife are going to be speaking, and the excitement is going to be unparalleled. The Republicans still, there's something about Barack Obama that terrifies them, and he's their boogeyman. And well, so go ahead, sir.
Well, they keep suggesting that he's the man behind the green curtain, that he's still running the country, that Joe Biden was simply doing what Barack Obama told him to do. It's all without any factual basis whatsoever, including on the inside in Washington. It's not something that has any currency there in terms of being believable. But yeah, for some reason, they think that they can scare their base into jumping aboard by suggesting that somehow Barack Obama, who probably ran the most dignified and honorable and trustworthy White House ever, is somehow someone to be afraid of.
Well, they are still afraid of him. And, you know, when he appears this evening, the excitement level is going to tick up even higher. And I don't, you know, Sandy, they're still going to attempt to attack him. Donald Trump still talks about him. And, you know, it's nonsensical. You know, he hasn't been the president for, what, 8 years? And yet his name still brings fear into the Republican lexicon, Sandy. I just for the life of me, I've never seen anything like it.
Well, you know, a little part of me, maybe a bigger part of me, fears that it has something to do with race, because the man is unbelievably charismatic. He's a very likable personality. He and his wife were as magical as any couple could be in the White House in terms of the image they portrayed and the way they behaved. And so, but however, the Republicans continue to view him as the devil, and they want to paint him as the devil. And I think as he gets increasingly far from the White House with more gray hair, I think that who he is becoming more and more apparent, which is an exceedingly smart, exceedingly likable, exceedingly charismatic personality.
And you know, the other side of it, Sandy, is barring some unforeseen health condition or some other horrific thing, he's still a very young man. He's going to be on the scene for a long time to come. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of energy, you know, and I think he's exercised great decorum. He stayed in the background. He's not tried to play his hand. He could. I mean, this is a man who is exceedingly popular in the world. He's one of the best known personalities in the entire world. And yet he is modest in the way he presents himself and the frequency with which he presents himself. He's managed to retreat to quite a private life. And so, you know, it defies my imagination. During the time he was president, I could not understand the extent to which he stirred up so much enmity amongst those who opposed him. And I was afraid that I could only lay it off on the notion that somehow a black man in the White House was a very troublesome thing for a number of people. And I don't think those people who felt that way knew that that's why they felt that way. I think that the extent that race is an issue in this country for many people, I think it's a subconscious problem, not one that is at their conscious level. And it hasn't been at anything like the conscious level that it's risen to until Donald Trump decided to make the dog whistle audible.
Let's go to Don from Milwaukee quickly. Don, go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'll try to make it quick here. Thanks for giving me a chance. The best comment of the night was from that young lady from, she's a congress lady from Texas. She said, and she hit the nail right in the head, Kamala has a resume and he has a rap sheet. I really love that line. Anyhow, have a good day, gentlemen.
Don, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, it just flies. You know, I'll keep you informed, man, over what happens the next few days until we meet again.
There you are in the heart of this, in the heart of it right there. And I think the next couple of days are going to be, I think this is going to be a rising crest of excitement. I think tonight will be very exciting, but I think that this convention is being very well orchestrated and it is running itself quite well.
Well, thank you as always, man. We'll talk in a couple of days. Calvin, thank you as always. Thank all the people who made the show go. Up next, Jane Mattinair and Greg Bach, Mattinair on Air. Enjoy the beautiful weather. See you soon.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We're live on location for the Democratic National Convention here at the United Center in Chicago. Great guest, Trigvi Olsen from the Lincoln Project, and more. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.